And now I think we'll move to a general Q&A of both of our speakers from this morning's presentations. So, Greg, if you're still online, well, I'll direct a question your way. It's come in here. It runs along this line. What might be the impact on employment, given your points about its contribution to the general economy? So what's the impact on the employment and the economy if the supply of refined oil declines? For example, if a refinery went offline or several refineries or there was an interruption in oil supplies?
So the U.S. has become a net exporter of refined products. In fact, last year was our first year that we exported almost all types of refined product. So we're getting, we bring in a substantial amount of crude. And then in Louisiana, mostly we refine and take it out. I don't suspect that on the refining side that we're going to have too many interruptions. I believe we had one in the Northeast. However, I don't necessarily suspect that any closures of our refineries are going to have substantial impact than what we already have on the current state of the economy. We are obviously going to have more volatility. Prices are going to go up and go down. However, last year we saw a little bit of unseasonally lower prices in refined products, even after some of the refineries went offline in kind of a baffling sense. But I don't suspect a large impact at all on employment with refineries going on and offline this particular spring time.
Okay. Another question for you, Vince. It's a little more in-depth, maybe, but the questioner asks, what changes in production ag do you see if there's no new farm bill, or if the current farm bill happens to get continued, or possibly where the farm bill might actually revert back to prior legislation?
Let me deal with the last issue first. There's no likelihood of a reversion back to the 48 bill. We'd be looking at, and we'd have to adjust, say, the wheat loan rate to $10 or $11. Two problems with that. If it's an open-ended loan rate, the cost would be enormous. Alternatively, if there were a limited amount of money, there'd be huge fights over who gets the amount of money allocated to the loan rate program. So there's no likelihood, I believe, of a reversion to the 48 bill. The most likely outcome right now, if there's no new farm bill, is an extension of the current farm bill for 1 year. I believe with about a 50% cut in direct payments, and that of course will affect the program commodities rather than the non-program commodities. So it'll affect wheat, corn, soybeans, and so on, but not fruits and vegetables. In terms of actual production decisions, there'll be almost no impact on farmers' decisions about what crops to produce. Those will be driven mainly by market signals that come out of the futures market for the major commodities like corn and wheat, and farmers' expectations about prices for other commodities where there aren't well-functioning futures markets. So very little impact at all on farmer decisions relative to what they would otherwise have been. We don't know what farmers would do with a new farm bill because we're not sure what that farm bill would look like even at this stage. The farm bill would take monies away from the direct payments program, which has minimal impacts on production decisions, and shift it into shell or loss programs, which actually will make the production of program commodities more lucrative. So we'll actually see a switch to production-based incentives for those program commodities. So at the margin, and we're talking about very small effects, I suspect, but at the margin, the program crops will become more lucrative relative to the non-program crops.
Okay. And now, Greg, not to leave you out, here's a question that might range a little deep as well. In your opinion, at what point or range of conditions would consumer debt, which includes student loans, impact the economy here in the U.S., either positively or maybe negatively?
At what point? Is this with reference to time or with respect to debt load?
I think we're talking about magnitude, yeah.
Magnitude?
Mm-hmm.
Household debt loads have continually fallen during the most recent recession. Some of this is households either defaulting on debt or paying down debt. Household kind of liquid asset accumulation has increased as well. In fact, even after the recession ended, households have continually saved in terms of liquid assets like cash, checking, and other currency-based assets. I suspect that in the future that we're going to continue to have slightly higher rates of savings, primarily because this younger generation has kind of entered the workforce during one of the worst times in the last 50 years, and this is going to have a substantial impact on their long-run savings rate and their willingness to take on debt. I suspect that the debt levels in the U.S. will remain somewhat high and that they're not likely to go down by substantial amounts, primarily because of our custom to the consumption level, which we're now presently in. On student loans, this is going to be kind of maybe the next somewhat mild financial crisis if it did hit. Primarily debt loads for college-educated individuals have risen substantially. Some of this is attributed to the total tuition levels rising rapidly, roughly around 5 or 6% per year. We also have issues with individuals and their willingness to work during the latter years of high school and during the summer months of college. That participation rate has fallen significantly. And we also see parents willing to contribute more towards the child in terms of their debt, taking on debt to see their children get through college. All of these kind of exasperate the student loan market and make it quite large. And then that in turn also, as I spoke to earlier, that will in turn have an effect back onto life decisions such as when to buy a house, when to get married, when to have a first child.
Okay. So thank you for that. I guess we have one final question of Vince. Vince, questioner here is asking, what do you see might be the impacts on the corn ethanol picture given the current high commodity prices?
Well, we're going to see a continuation of some problems for the older ethanol plants that are really very inefficient operations given relative to current technologies. But really, the ethanol market is actually going to be driven by the ethanol mandate. And as long as Congress holds to the current time path for the ethanol mandate, production of ethanol will have to be expanded pretty much every year. But we actually know that the U.S. has no capacity to meet the current mandate for bio-diesel / bioenergy-based non-ethanol, non-standard ethanol production. We know that the U.S. cannot do that. We know that switchgrass doesn't work and isn't being, and so we're not getting cellulosic ethanol being produced. That seems to be a pipe dream that researchers from Michigan State hold on to. We know that's not going to work. So we know there are going to have to be changes in the ethanol mandate, and those changes, if the current aggregate level of mandate for ethanol use is maintained, mean a shift back to more corn-based ethanol production in the U.S. The only other alternative is to import sugar-based ethanol from Brazil, and it will be a cold day in the nether region before that is likely to happen, I think. So The bigger question for ethanol production and for the price of corn is whether Congress will continue the renewable fuels mandate, and especially whether it will continue the renewable fuels mandate along the time path that's currently laid out. If the mandate went away, we'd still see roughly 8 to 10 billion gallons of ethanol produced every year, because that's the amount that's required to replace MTBE, which is a lower cost way of getting the additives the fuel needs, but has clearly had health implications. So if the latter case held, we would see the older plants producing ethanol close pretty quickly. And all the production would be located in plants built within the last 4 or 5 years. Now, we really don't know what's going to happen to the renewable fuels mandate. That really is contingent on what happens in November. If we got a Republican president and a Republican Senate and a Republican House, my bet is that the ethanol mandate would disappear very rapidly. If we reelect President Obama and the Senate remains Democratic, and let's say the Democrats improve their position in the House, that's a different story. Although there is concern among the left, and particularly among the conservation movement, about the carbon footprint gains from corn-based ethanol relative to oil. So that world's, I think, a pretty murky world for the future, but really contingent on the political decision about where to go with the renewable fuels mandate.
I'm afraid that we've run out of time, so I want to take this opportunity to thank both Dr. Gilpin and Dr. Smith very much for an outstanding presentation on U.S. and domestic trade issues and the implications for U.S. agriculture. I'm confident that many, if not all, of our listeners have really benefited from your insights. And I'd like to remind everyone that as we move to wrap up this first session in today's webinar conference, that the recordings, both audio and video, of this presentation, as well as the remainder of our presentations today, will be available at our website. In addition, we invite you to consider participating in one or more of the upcoming sessions today, which will cover crops and hay, as well as forage outlook, outlook for livestock and dairy, and specialty, niche, and food safety issues for folks involved in that sector of agriculture. As mentioned earlier, those recordings of our presentations and other information are available at Ag in Uncertain Times, the website set up for hosting these programs, which will provide additional instructions on how to access in just a minute. If you're interested in a copy of any of today's presentation slides, those are also available at the site for download. We would also like to hear from you, our participants, about topics or presentations you'd like to see offered in the future. Either send us an email via the email address that's on the screen, westrme@wsu.edu, or type in the chat box there on the left side of your screen, and we will receive that and appreciate any insights that you might offer to our team for future topics. Finally, as we've mentioned a number of different URLs and different email addresses throughout this webinar, in order to provide you with a single reference for all that information, we've compiled a PDF file which you may now download via the file share pod on your screen. Simply click on the file name listed and then click the Save to My Computer button at the bottom to download the file to your own desktop. Let me close by again extending our thanks to both of today's speakers for their first-class presentation on U.S. and domestic trade issues and the implications for U.S. agriculture. I also want to thank our Ag in Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for making this series possible. We would like to thank, finally, all the participants in today's webinar conference. The next of today's sessions will begin at the top of the hour, and the times for all of today's sessions are posted at the Ag in Uncertain Times website. We hope to see you again on one of our upcoming programs. Until then, We offer you our sincerest hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. And for Ag in Uncertain Times, I'm John Hewlett.